views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string.
Morning, Shasta County. It is Father's Day, and I thought leading in with that song might be a little bit more appropriate than my normal Billy Joel song, being Father's Day. So again, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day to all the moms pulling double duty as well and filling that role. I feel really blessed that I have my oldest daughter, Kylie, in studio with me. Good morning, Kylie.
Good morning.
So it's a Father's Day treat that she's up this early. No, not really. She gets up and works really hard almost every day. But I wanted to spend the first 10 or 12 minutes just doing some Father's Day, just having a Father's Day talk. And then the last two-thirds of the show, we're going to bring a special guest on that I'm really excited about. And so we'll get to that in a second. If you've ever heard of the book, The Love Dare, by Stephen Kendrick, one of the co-authors, he outlines seven roles that a father plays in the life of his family: provider, protector, leader, teacher, helper, encourager, and friend. You know, and the relationship between a father and a child has a deep impact on a child's overall and long-term healthy development. And too often, fathers don't get a lot of the credit, I think, that they deserve for the importance of the role in a kid's life. And often there's immense blame placed on them when they're not perfect. But children whose fathers are involved in their daily care, such as feeding, bathing, playing together, etc., they tend to be more confident. And one thing I know, as my daughter grows older, she is very confident, and I'm just super proud of her. So, Kylie, let me ask you, and this isn't just for you per se, but you just graduated from college. You're 19, mm-hmm. not 20.
Yeah.
And just got your bachelor's. You've entered into your master's program in a week?
Yeah, in July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm started paying for it, I think. So I know. But the what would you say as a psychology major with your undergraduate and getting your master's in counseling? What do you think, and what is education teaching us about the father's life in the family? Is it provider, protector, leader, teacher, helper, encourager, and friend?
I mean, I don't think in my education, we haven't really learned about the importance of a father, but from my personal experience, I just would say you taught me to do the little things. So growing up, I'd always take my shoes off, you know, not untying them, but just step on the back of them.
That drives me nuts.
And my dad would always go, hey, you don't do that. You untie your shoe and take them off like that. And I never really understand why, but it was always just the little things growing up that he taught me, and the consistency and that I apply now into my adult life, like the consistency of doing my classes or getting to work on time or staying late for the job or things like that.
How do you start your day?
I start my day now going to the gym and waking up, but I'm trying to get into a routine.
Make your bed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's the one thing I know you want to do every single day is you want to have success, and you want to have success right out of the gate. So I've always I won't say always. I've said the last, you know, 10, 15 years, I've really honed in on the little things that really make the big differences. So what do you think, here being Father's Day, is there one memory or one thing that sticks out to you that just sticks out, where I was maybe really, really, really hard on you, and in that moment you didn't see any justice or justification, but now as an adult who's getting married next month, mm-hmm. congratulations again to that, and what would that be?
Oh, gosh. So my dad was my basketball coach for pretty much my entire life. I remember this one time I was messing around at practice and, you know, crying and complaining to him that I wasn't making my shots, weren't falling in my layups. And he just said, okay, you can just get out of practice. And I went and stood outside of, you know, the Buckeye gym. And I was really frustrated at him at the time. But then I, you know, reflect now and I'm like, well, yes, he threw me out. But at the same time, I probably could have had my reaction different.
You know, the one thing, and I remember that, that's funny that you bring that one up, because throwing you out of practice probably wasn't one of my greatest moments as a dad or as a coach. But the one thing I know is I've been an equal opportunity hold accountabler, if that's a word, right? I know that it doesn't matter, you know, what the circumstance, right is right. And that's why, and actually I'm not a big country music fan at all. But that song that we just listened to by Aaron Tippin, You've Got to Stand for Something or You'll Fall for Anything, that has been I've played that a lot, actually, the last few days because I'd never actually even heard it before. But then being able to listen to it and, you know, there's a line in there. Well, I'll read part of it. It just says, now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side he'd be on. And I think that's one thing that I think it's really important for dads is to have that consistency and have people be able to understand that, hey, I know where my dad is going to stand on this. And there's going to be no wavering of that. That doesn't mean there's not grace, but it definitely means right is right and wrong is wrong. And the next line is he never was a hero or this county's shining light, but you always could find him standing up for what he thought was right. And I think that's something also right now that we need more than ever in this county is, and I'm not going to say it's not important for moms and grandmothers and aunts and sisters to stand up right now, but yesterday's message at Pathway Church, and of course will be the same message today, but was surrounding about the role and importance of fathers and reflecting back of our true Father who is God and Christ in heaven. So I think if that is the ultimate example of fatherhood, which is loving, compassionate, caring, but just, very, very just, righteous. And all of us on earth that are earthly fathers, we are broken, flawed, very imperfect, but striving for that type of father's love for our kids and for the people around us, I think is really important. So, Kylie, do you have any last little tidbits here for all the kids out there that have their Father's Day ahead of them?
I just would say appreciate all the little things. You know, if your dad wasn't hard on you, I mean, if your dad is hard on you, it's because he cares. If he didn't care, he wouldn't tell you to untie your shoes, wouldn't tell you to put your backpack up in your room or to make your bed.
Yeah, that's great. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to bring a friend of mine from Nevada County on, and we're going to start unpacking some things that came out of our budget hearing and some other items surrounding elections, because that's still a hot-button topic. So when we come back out of the break, we'll have Amy Young from Nevada County. This is KCNR. 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. We'll be right back.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersh, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretta trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular Vibroplates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, gravels, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver with no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
This is Dan Sloan, chair of the Shasta County GOP. I urge Shasta County residents not to sign the petition to recall local Shasta County Supervisor Kevin Cry. A new California law, AB 2582, allows Gavin Newsom to handpick the next supervisor. They want a liberal Democrat. Keep the Sacramento catastrophe out of Shasta County and do not support the recall. To donate or for more information, go to nooncryrecall.com. Paid for by the Committee to Stop Newsom. No on Cry Recall.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
We are back. And again, that was my lead-in song normally, Billy Joel, My Life. I am Kevin Cry, and this is my show. And I am, again, thankful for Kylie being here in studio with me today. On the phone, I'm going to bring in Amy Young. Amy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Amy. All right, so I want to give everybody a quick background on how we met. We met, two or three months ago, the Nevada County Republican Central Committee, when AB 969 was originally drafted and came out, and the Board of Supervisors voted to terminate the Dominion contract and go towards a full hand count. They were the first county to show a very outward support of that decision. So that came out, and then others followed. But Amy actually reached out in an email, and it was a personal email, and just said, "Hey, thank you so much," and it really meant a lot. So we started talking, and just so you know, AB 969, the original assembly draft of the bill on March 23rd was: a county board of supervisors shall not terminate an existing voting system contract without a transition plan and a replacement contract in place. So, okay, you could see they do that right after Shasta County did that. And this whole process, and I want to remind everybody, elections wasn't one of the things I ran on. It wasn't necessarily even on my radar. I mean, I've always had kind of my doubts both ways, but one of the things this process with elections has taught me is it's really, really made me hyper aware of this particular process, of what the government can do. And again, those that have been in the that have been very engaged, or let's say I'm doing air quotes, but who have been in the fight for years, they know this isn't new. We look at the Fountain Wind Project and how that's coming back. We look at parental rights and how in schools they're trying to strip parents of those. So for me, the election thing is I'm very, very interested in, not just because it's elections per se, but because I've had a front row seat and I've been at the ground floor of seeing what's happened. So now, this last week, the legislature came out with some huge sweeping changes to AB 969. And before we get to that, Amy, tell us a little bit about when the Secretary of State was putting out their new regulations for hand counting. Tell us a little bit about what we have done as a state of California with in regards to hand counting and what the new regulations were, and then we'll jump into AB 969.
The Secretary of State followed the original version of AB 969, which you read, with some very cumbersome regulations on manual tally, or some people call it a hand counting. The regulations were ridiculous and, in my opinion, designed to make any county such as Shasta trying to conduct a full manual tally, they were trying to make that county fail at doing it. They had things like requiring medical grade exam gloves to be worn by all people conduct involved with the manual tally.
So people understand too, the manual tally, counties already do that. There's already a 1% audit that they do, mm-hmm. and they're not required to wear medical grade gloves, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So somehow counties have been able to conduct their 1% manual tally, which is a quality control check for every election conducted with machines, without any regulations and very little guidance from the Secretary of State outside of the statutes that were already in place. And, none of that was required or necessary, and the counties were able to do it very successfully from the large counties like Los Angeles down to the smallest counties. We've been doing manual tallies for years of anywhere from 1,000 ballots to 53,000 ballots.
Exactly. So what were some of the other really cumbersome regulations that when the Secretary of State came out with the hand counting mm-hmm. process, what was another one that was, because I mean, the medical grade glove one to me, I thought was just comical. Like, we've never done that, and all of a sudden we're going to require that. What was another one?
Right. Yeah. So 10 feet of space between tables for each counting board. A counting board has four people. So they want 10 feet of space, and they want a plan, a manual tally plan, that will draw the layout of the room, which would have to be like an auditorium, right, to fit all these counting tables with 10 feet of space. They want a layout that's drawn to scale. I don't know if you've ever drawn anything to scale, but basically you need an architect or you need architectural experience to draw it. So
the one thing, and then so what was the requirement of table space for counting boards prior to the Secretary of State's stuff coming out?
There was none.
There was none. So what's interesting to me is something that had been done forever with no thought to how it was done. Now they say we're going to say it's 10 feet. And realistically, mm-hmm. What I've seen is, you know, it can be done like a couple feet because a person's not screaming, a person's not yelling. You're not going to interfere with the person next to you. I mean, I don't know how many times I've gone by a church and seen a bunch of people playing bunco, right? And those tables are right on top of each other and they're yelling, but everyone still seems to be able to do what they're doing. So I think also this space requirement is just making it where you're going to need, like you said, an auditorium or a convention center or a fairgrounds building. So you see these regulations coming down, and one of the things is for AB 969, there is a hearing that's coming this week, and different people, counties, et cetera, have put in to be heard, but they decided to make the hearing Zoom because of COVID-19. And that, to me, is – so if you look across the Capitol, all the different things that are happening, there's tons of meetings in person. They're meeting in person, but yet because of COVID-19, we are going to have to call in. And that was on their website. And that, to me, is just another example of how they're really not wanting anybody to be successful. And I'd be willing to bet I'm sure servers will go down or something will happen. Okay, so – so go help us now as we look at AB 969. What have they added? What have they added to that bill in the language now? So, like, where are they going?
Yeah, they I believe that they did this in response to some work done by patriot groups like Team Hope, which does a lot of research. They changed AB 969 to accommodate everything. So they basically overreacted and are outlawing hand counting. Here's some language from the proposed amendments to the bill. An elections official shall not perform a manual vote count. An elections official shall not conduct a manual vote count. The Secretary of State shall adopt regulations regarding manual vote counts. They had to go back and do that because they realized that the regulations that the Secretary of State had proposed were not lawful. She had no authority, no, under the statute, to require gloves or to micromanage hand counting like she was trying to do. So they went ahead and covered that. an elections official shall use a voting machine. So they are specifying no man, don't even try to do a manual tally. And this voting machine shall be used to for ADA compliance, which is another topic. I mean, nobody has a problem with providing full and equal access to all voters, right?
Correct.
And also they shall use the voting machine to tabulate votes. So they're making it very specific. You've got to tabulate votes with a voting machine.
So basically what they're doing is now they're – and they're taking away – now they're saying – so the process was, okay, Shasta County, you want to manual tally. Well, we have to come up with some guidelines and regulations on how you can do that. And keep in mind, we've been doing this with an audit and larger counties like San Bernardino, L.A., San Diego. Their audits are about as big as our entire election here in Shasta County. So we've had the capability. Mm-hmm. We've had the ability to do it, and it hasn't been a problem. Mm-hmm. So then as they're rolling this out, they put up AB 969 to say, okay, we're not going to let counties do this ever again. They put the regulations out that make it a lot harder to do it. In the process, they decide, oh, you know what, looking back at AB 969, we don't want people to hand count at all. So now they're putting the legislation forward where you have to put them through a tabulation machine. And then they're saying, and what's the number? Like how – is it 1,000 voters? If it's more than 1,000 voters, you can't hand count? Is that what that new language that's being proposed is?
So no counties. More than 1,000 voters, yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm pausing not for dramatic effect. I'm pausing because it's like the Twilight Zone. It's crazy to me that instead of the state working with us to do something we've already done, they said, okay, we're going to make it really, really hard. And now they realize, people like myself, people like you, and many other counties. And, you know, for me, I'm talking with 11 counties. And I'm not saying just random citizens. I'm talking about supervisors, city council members, and in a lot of these counties, it's multiple people. Or I've talked to all 5 supervisors because I can talk to 5 supervisors. They can't talk amongst themselves, but I can talk to 5. And when I see and when I raise the questions to them, and some of these individuals have been in office, this is their 4th term and considering a 5th. And they say, yeah, this is getting crazy. Like, this isn't something, like, I've seen this type of thing, but this is a little bit different. And so for me, if they take that away, Amy, so what's the next process for this bill to go through where they just say, okay, no more hand counting at all?
Yeah, it's in the Senate. It's in the state Senate right now. I believe it is to be brought up for deliberations or hearing on June 20th. And I want to urge everybody, please write in to your state senator and tell them you oppose AB 969. It is taking authority, sovereignty away from county boards to select the method that they deem appropriate for their constituents to tabulate votes. It's imposing, like we said, the purchase and use of these voting systems. These are not cheap systems. It's not just the initial purchase. It's the storage and storage licensing every year. There's a, or it depends on the contract, but you got to pay to license that software over and over again. So it is in the Senate. It is not passed yet. They are calling in an urgency statute because they just can't have any other counties like Shasta voting to get rid of the voting machines. So they're putting this into effect immediately once it's passed. So it is not passed, so please write into the legislature and tell them you oppose AB 969.
So one other thing I want to, as we look at the data of this, and I know that I asked you to look back, you know, based on Kathy Darling Allen, our local clerk, her own proven performance in the 1% manual tally conducted for the 2022 general election, which is, you know, the election that I was seated in, and that was in November. And again, this is off of the clerk's website, but she oversaw 2 counting boards who tallied 5,355 full ballots cast and the full ballot of the 5,355, that's voters, in 8 days. So she could, I believe, do a manual tally of 80,000 ballots, which would be a very high turnout for Shasta County in 21 days with 12 teams of four and one counting board. And each counting board has four people. Now, I know some things at scale can become somewhat problematic, but as I've looked at that, I mean, so tell me, when you looked into the numbers that other counties have done, you know, like San Bernardino, San Francisco, L.A., and you look at Shasta County, like, help me get there where why Shasta County couldn't. I mean, help make the case of why Shasta County can't hand count.
Why they can or can't?
Let's just say why they can. I'm just saying, like, we absolutely can. There is no doubt in my mind, because Kathy Darling's proved it in her office that she can hand count at a pace that, so either these numbers are fabricated, which I know they're not, or they're honest, which I believe they are, and that's a perfect example. And these aren't, and again, you could look on the website, we're not talking about single contests. I mean, they did audits of full entire ballots, and they pull them from. Mm-hmm. And can you explain a little bit to the listeners of where they pull those from? It's not just, I mean, they pull them from three separate groups of ballots coming in.
Yeah, so it's called a 1% manual tally, and it is they randomly select precincts to do a manual tally of those ballots. It's so that they can do an accuracy check on the voting machine. And so that's how they do that. It's done, like you said, every county, small to large. They have to do this. When they do this, the human eyes are often, interestingly, able to catch machine errors. So we're always told that hand counting is inaccurate, or, you know, we just can't do it. But it's funny, because we get a reconciliation, or if there's no reconciliation, like, it's not a perfect match with what the humans find, it's because the humans find something that the machine did wrong. The scanner made an error. It picked up a little blip. It counted it as a vote, or it counted the contest as an overvote, that type of thing. So a lot of times, humans are able to actually catch errors and ascertain what the voter really intended to vote.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and again, this doesn't – the broader picture for me is really, why is the state fighting this so hard? Why are we losing, or possibly losing, local control for something that five sitting supervisors have voted on in public and said, this is what we want to do, and the state says no? So what we're going to do now is, during our budget hearings, we're going to transition a little bit, but we're going to stay kind of on an election theme here. One of our department heads, and that's the chief technology officer, Tom Schreiber, came up, gave a great presentation about his budget. And we have three different clips here. And the first clip we're going to play has to do with the upkeep of the machines across the network at the county. So that means all of our infrastructure, the intranet, emails, all the cybersecurity, and the process of making sure it's constantly updated. So, Liam, if we could we play clip one right now?
The tools are just out there. You can go download a toolkit, you know, a rootkit for a system, and instructions how to hack it. If you haven't patched that system, it's vulnerable, right? So it's very important to do your patches, do your updates, right? Make sure you have that stuff done. They're doing that for a reason.
Okay, so now, when we talk about patching a system and we talk about making sure those cyber walls are constantly updated, I didn't know this, but in my conversations since that budget meeting and talking to Amy, and again, I wasn't going to have Amy on until we decided, shoot, I think it was like at 8 o'clock last night, when she said she there's a couple things that she found through FOIAs and public records requests. Tell us a little bit So our chief technology officer here at the county, been in technology 35 years, was a former Air Force vet. And he talks about the importance of constantly updating your system. So tell us a little bit about updating voting systems or voting machines, Amy, what you found through your public records requests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not updated. They, I asked the Secretary of State in a public records request, how are you keeping these voting systems updated? Just basically with, it's called hardening, cyber, an IT term. And I'm not an IT professional. I just learned that as through my research. How do you harden these systems? Especially because one of the systems in use in California uses a Windows 7 operating system. Windows 7 is out of, no longer supported as of January 2020. So I'm thinking like, wow, how do you guys harden a system that cannot be hardened? So what I learned was...
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, what they replied was, we cannot. I can read you the exact language here if you want.
Read it, because I read it and I think it's important.
Okay. Yeah, so the antivirus software was installed on the voting system at the time of testing and certification. If a system under consideration for certification is certified, the software and firmware becomes a trusted build for the system. The California Secretary of State holds the trusted build in a secure location and distributes it securely to California counties to maintain strict chain of custody. The trusted build is not modified unless the manufacturer applies for a modification and the modified version is approved and certified. So if they add anything to the system, even if it's just a patch for viruses or malware or Trojan horses type of thing, that whole system has to be recertified.
So just so we're all clear, the Secretary of State says, okay, you can't touch those machines, because then we'd have to recertify them. So they haven't been updated and patched. And we just heard our chief IT officer saying that you have to constantly patch and update all your cybersecurity walls and mainframe, et cetera. So now we're going to go to a clip. And then I don't know what that little buzzing is. So I think it went away. Okay, so now we're going to go to clip two. And clip two is about Bluetooth technology and where it's gone. And then, so let's go ahead and play clip two.
Expanded, right? Bluetooth is faster. It just keeps growing. Bluetooth is a huge security vulnerability, right? And what people just turn on Bluetooth and they connect whatever they want to connect. They might not even know what they're connecting to, or they think they're connecting to something that they know. And now they have this, what they call the middleman.
Okay, so right? Go ahead and pause it right there.
You go to a hotel.
And one of the things, I mean, and he didn't say anything there that's earth-shattering, but if you go back and listen to actually his presentation about cybersecurity and about just his experience in how much faster, not just technologies in terms of, you know, 3G, 4G, 5G, but just the reach and the amount of vulnerabilities that exist because of not just Bluetooth, but because of security breaches and updates not being made. So, okay, so where does this leave us? So then what we – and again, this whole process for me hasn't been around voting, right? Much like that Aaron Tippin song at the very, very beginning that we talked about and listened to, it's about – you know, if you don't stand for something, you fall for everything. And for me, this isn't about voting people. This is about understanding. And again, I'm not an anti-government guy. I mean, my undergraduate's in social science. I mean, we have to have law. We have to have order. We have to have processes. But the government really is the people. And what I've loved about this process is the people I've met along the way that are just literally your average, everyday people, not people that really set out to be in office and be in power. Those are the ones I'm the most scared of. So this last clip we're going to play is I'm saying, okay, well, if we have all of this, technology and infrastructure and vulnerabilities, et cetera, a lot of things come down to money, right? Like we know money and power is what drives a lot of things. well, a lot of things that were people I don't think their motives are pure. So this last clip we're going to play is about some systems in place that we use here in the county and we use across the state. So let's play clip three, Liam.
Yeah, and I know the costs just become outrageous because people can charge whatever they want for cybersecurity because that's your banks, that's your info, that's your life.
Well, and you're required to have it now. And if you look at the state requirements and the various agreements that we sign with some of these agencies, you have to follow these guidelines, NIST guidelines, right, the CIS control guidelines. I shouldn't call them guidelines. They're requirements, right? So you have to do these things.
Yeah. I mean, we're voluntold.
Okay, yeah, Okay, so you just heard it, CIS control guidelines. Now, when I'm up there as a gym owner, talent agent, live event guy, father, husband, just average, everyday guy doing his thing, I hear that, control guidelines, CIS. Okay, I mean, it sounds, I mean, a guy that's our, you know, chief technology officer using language that I don't necessarily understand, but this is where I'll tell you, coaching has been the best thing I ever did to be in politics. Because one thing, I don't care if we got slaughtered in a game or if we did the slaughtering or it was a nail biter, I would always go back and watch game film. And usually I'd be more critical than excited because I always wanted to look to improve, much like Kylie taking your untying your shoes to take them off. It's the little thing. So I went back and watched this, and I saw that. And Amy had brought something up about CIS control guidelines, and we kind of put this together last night, and Amy had actually done a ton of work on this. So, Amy, unpack for us what he's talking about and why that's a really, really big deal.
Yeah. Okay, you want me to unpack it?
Well, yeah. I'm talking about the CIS, what that is, and then the data with the other program and the access to public data that we basically give up. So go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so CIS stands for Center for Internet Security. Don't confuse that with another acronym, which is more well-known. We'll talk about that in a minute, I think. CIS is a non-governmental organization. They call it an NGO. Most counties, I think all counties in California, I think most counties nationwide, have a contract with CIS, and that is because they purchased, or some counties purchased, some counties got for free. I don't know what the special deal was, but my county spent thousands of dollars on this a server called an Albert sensor. It is just basically a Dell server that is installed at the, I guess it would be the firewall position around the county network. And this sensor it was sold to county boards of supervisors to monitor all traffic coming in to the county. CIS collects this data, and because it's a non-governmental organization, someone like me who tries to learn about what my government is doing via public records request, I'm totally blind to what CIS is doing. I cannot submit a public records request to them. So that they just took it out of the public eye. And what they do with this data, what I do know from research, they store this ample, extreme amount of data on the Amazon cloud. I don't know about you, but I've never done a records request to Amazon. Have you?
Yeah. So, okay. I hear you laughing a little bit because I know it's so why is it mind blowing or almost comical to you? About what they're doing with our data?
Well, the Public Records Act drafted in California was really meant to provide total transparency into everything our government does. So I have to laugh because there is no transparency in this.
I don't know
what the government is doing with our data.
So something that was designed and placed right before the American people, or let's not even say the American people, which we all are American people, but the supervisors in each county supposed to be American people, right? Because you have to be a citizen to run. But the thing is, this is put in front of supervisors that vote and say, well, yeah, we want a transparent government. I'll vote for that. And then it just goes away. So because I got this information just, you know, late last night. I haven't had a chance to talk to Tom Schreiber about this and do a little bit of my work. So, and to be honest, we have a board meeting on Tuesday, and it's going to be a crazy week. But I would encourage anybody, any listeners that want to do some of that research, because I don't have a staff. We don't have a staff in Shasta County that runs this stuff down. We do it as supervisors. So if anybody wants to pitch in and help, I'll send an email for sure. But I would like to know a little bit more about our contract with CIS. I would almost guarantee we have one, because, Amy, you said how many counties? I mean, pretty much every county that you've looked into some of these different stuff has one, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And then the so what would people be asking for when it comes? So the Albert sensor, is that the term that people need to catch on to in terms of what they want to know, where that data is collected and where that goes? Is that the best question?
You just say that this is a public records request. You could probably ask the clerk of the board, because there would be a contract in place that the supervisors would have approved to purchase it.
Got it.
And that's how I did. I just said any and all contracts with CIS and or CISA, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
okay, so
then,
we'll go to CISA. So before people mm-hmm. start inundating the county with public records requests, mm-hmm. give me a day. So if you're listening, give me a day to look into that, because I don't want to create a bunch more work for the county. And Tom, Mr. Schreiber's always mm-hmm. been super responsive, so I have no doubt he'll get back to me. So before everybody starts on that, and I'll have that in my board report this Tuesday with what I found out. But go ahead, tell us a little bit about the CISA. We've got about three or four more minutes, and then I got a segue. So go ahead, CISA.
Yeah, so CISA is CISA. We're more familiar with that. It's the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. That is an arm of the DHS. So that is part of it. That is an agency of the federal government. And after this Albert sensor was installed and the contract put in place with CIS, what I found in my county, at least, is that CISA entered into a contract with my county in 2019, wherein it was able to map out the entire county's network via a VPN. And one of the things about this agreement with CISA is this is what the contract says. Users have no reasonable expectation of privacy regarding communications or data transiting stored on or traveling to or from this network system. So CISA, CIS, they are surveilling our county systems for the purpose of cybersecurity for elections. That's kind of where this all ties into elections. They're telling us what threats there are to these voting systems that are not connected to the internet, they tell us. It's like this double standard. Like, they mock us, they deride us for, and I mean the media sometimes, for asking about these voting systems, which are computers, asking if they're secure. They tell us they are never connected to the internet. But then they have these extensive networks in place to surveil the county, all related to elections.
Exactly. So I'm going to read this again just because I want it to be really, really clear so they can understand what you just read. It says users, and in quotes, this is from the how does this contract affect the privacy of users of the county's network website, right? So this says users have no reasonable expectation of privacy regarding communications or data transiting stored on or traveling to or from this network system. Any communications or data transiting stored on or traveling to or from this network system will be monitored and may be disclosed to third parties, including other governmental entities, or used for any lawful government purpose. That last sentence, or used for any lawful government purpose. Well, what we know now is anything is lawful if the government says it is. Because we could hand count, then it was going to be hard, and now they're saying we can't. And that's going to be lawful. And this is why you'll see people that everyone says, oh, that person's a conspiracy theorist, or that person's a far right, this or that. And here's the thing. I mean, Amy's a mom, a wife, just your everyday average person that said, you know, and I'm not saying you're average, Amy, but you know what I mean. And the thing is Yeah, and I've met so many great people, this last year and a half, that it's been shocking to me to see what people are uncovering just by having inquisitive minds and just saying, hey, I want to ask some questions. So what Amy's found here is a complete double standard of, you know, we're talking out of both sides of our mouth. Machines can't be hacked, but yet we're going to have all this security and we're going to have all these processes in place in the event that they are. And Shasta County's paying for it. Now, again, the CIS isn't just about elections, but that is a part of it. And when there's
it is about elections.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's specifically associated with elections.
Not solely, though, right? Or is this just elections?
Yeah, solely.
Solely. Okay, well, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's created because of elections. It's associated with another organization called MSISAC, Multi-State Infrastructure. I forget that acronym, but, yeah, it's specifically for elections.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, you know what, Amy? I think what we're going to do is I'm going to bring you back on maybe as AB 969 continues to unfold at the state level. And, again, we're seeing stuff. And just so everybody knows, like maybe you're not reading it, but, you know, Arizona already said, you know, no critical infrastructure can be made. Parts can't be made in other countries. Of course, most of the voting systems or machines are made overseas in China. So Arizona says, like, no more machines, and that's going through their process. You saw the huge report that just came out of Georgia that said as an independent investigation, those records were unsealed, and it was riddled with huge issues of security and breach. I would encourage listeners to read on that out of Georgia. It's coming. I think we're on the front end of this. And again, I will restate, this has never been about voting for me. This has been about just understanding as a newly elected official and asking questions. And I don't want to ever, the worst thing anybody could ever say to me, essentially, as it comes to being in political office, would be ever called the go-along, get-along guy. Back to that Aaron Tippin song, you've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. We're going to go to break. We're going to be right back. I'll tie up the last 8-9 minutes or so of the show with just an update on just my campaign and more lies that are put out there. So we'll be right back after this message. Amy, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersh, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment, like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretta trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular Vibra plates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, gravels, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver with no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
This is Dan Sloan, chair of the Shasta County GOP. I urge Shasta County residents not to sign the petition to recall local Shasta County Supervisor Kevin Cry. A new California law, AB 2582, allows Gavin Newsom to handpick the next supervisor. They want a liberal Democrat. Keep the Sacramento catastrophe out of Shasta County and do not support the recall. To donate or for more information, go to nooncryrecall.com. Paid for by the Committee to Stop Newsom. No on cry recall.
All right, we're back. Kevin Cry, my show. And I just got to tell you, this has been a crazy last two or three months as we progress into the world of recall. And so I want to go back really quick. And I think the media is terrible. I think the majority of the media is terrible. There's a couple of good ones out there. But I want to unpack this recall thing. And I don't usually spend a lot of time on it, but I'm just getting so sick and tired of individuals on the Aqua blue shirt crew, and which I think is comical, by the way, that they use, you know, black font on a blue shirt. Maybe someone with a design background could have done something about that, but whatever. So I want to talk about an article that was written in the Record Searchlight here, because the opposition, the recall group, says Newsom won't appoint. You know, there was this flyer that comes out that says, you know, sign then vote. So basically sign the petition and then you get to vote for a supervisor. Well, what's really crazy is I want to be polite. It's Father's Day and everybody's probably fathers too. So happy Father's Day to everybody that's even against me. But I'll tell you, they say, well, we're going to lobby the governor. And that's just like somebody saying, going up into the batter's box, because there's an established strike zone. We know there's a strike zone. You can't tell your hitters as a coach, hey, go up there in the batter's box, but I've already told the umpire, you know, don't call any strikes. Well, yeah, maybe if you've paid that umpire off, or maybe if there's something kind of wonky going on, but if the ball goes through that strike zone and you don't swing, it's going to be called a strike. And what's crazy is a bunch of these individuals think because they sign a letter telling Gavin Newsom, please don't interfere, that that's going to work. And then they say that I'm spewing lies and fear propaganda that Newsom won't appoint the supervisor. You're darn right he will. And here's why. And here's the proof. And even though I'm not even going to give him credit or give a name on here, but with the Record Searchlight article was written, they're trying to twist it. But as poorly as this individual writes articles half the time, he did get something very right. And at least, right, you look at a broken clock, it's even right twice a day. But they go through and they say, here's a couple counties where people applied and Newsom didn't touch it. He didn't get involved. Well, that's because they were red counties. That's because they were red counties. And when you look at the article in Glenn County, I mean, they've tried to get Newsom to appoint. People have applied. And at the end of the day, you look right here, and this is a quote. It says, I don't know because, you know, we're not getting any communication from the governor's office on a potential appointment, he said. At one point, we asked who had applied so the board could send a letter of support, but they wouldn't share that information with us. What happens is they do not want to fill that because it's a conservative county and they don't care. They just don't care. The governor's office does not care. But you look at Lake County. They requested quick action, and guess what? It's a Democrat county. It's a very Democrat county. And so he appointed very, very quickly because he can keep it Democrat. The reality is if people are going to rely on my opposition making a deal with the devil in terms of Gavin Newsom, I mean, that already should show you. They're saying, hey, we want to work with the governor. Maybe we can lobby him for support, and he'll support our efforts. What does that tell you? And they say, oh, they're not liberals. I mean, I don't know one conservative, one true conservative, that would try and reach out to Gavin Newsom and trust him to cut a deal. Do you realize that as he's been the governor, he has not met with the sheriffs in the state? Every quarter, all 58 county sheriffs get together and they talk about, you know, everything as it relates to jails, law enforcement, keeping people safe, infrastructure, budget, etc. Gavin Newsom has never met with the group. Never. And every governor since the beginning of time, as far as I can research and see, have always met with them. But yet Gavin Newsom is tearing down our jails, tearing down our criminal justice system, all this legislation that's coming through, and, you know, obviously 47, 57, AB 109, all that stuff's been around pre-Newsom, but he's not doing anything, excuse me, he's not doing anything to try and back that off. He's doubling down on a lot of it. And so the people that are trying to unseat me want to work with that guy to try and help, quote-unquote, help Shasta County. Let's call it what it is, sore losers that were upset that they lost in November. They were always going to come back at me, but I'm tired of them saying that we're lying, because look at the bills, 2582. obviously they can appoint. He's got the ability to do it, and he will do it. Don't kid yourself. You guys have a great Father's Day weekend. Love your kids if you're a dad, and have a great week, Shasta County.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.